Good evening. The meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have three bills on the agenda tonight. House File 3397, the Lands Bill. House File 3605, the Environment Policy Bill. And House File, I believe it's 3058, IRRRB. We'll start with the Lands Bill. If Representative Cornish would come forward. The chair will move that House File 3397 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Cornish, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the annual DNR land sale bill that will authorize the DNR to sell and exchange different parcels of quite a few of them as state-owned land and add and delete lands from the boundaries of the state parks, state recreation areas, and forests. And it's getting ever enlarging as we speak, but I will introduce Mrs. Lewis from the DNR to go over the bill if you have questions. If you want to give a rundown of it first, Mr. Chair?
You know, why don't you give us a brief rundown? We've got several amendments that are being passed out. Not an extensive one because some of us who are on other conference committees have some other engagements this evening, but if you can give us a few minutes, please. Give us your name for the record and please give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kathy Lewis with the Division of Lands and Minerals, DNR. There's basically four topic areas covered by this bill. First area is some boundary changes for DNR management units. We're requesting boundary changes in 8 state parks, 2 state recreation areas, and 1 state forest. Many of the changes have been requested by private owners of both of the land, and we also are making some deletions from similar recreation areas and state parks. The second area of the bill is an Itasca County land exchange to facilitate mining. This was added to the original DNR bill. It's for Minnesota Steel Industries developing a taconite mine and plant in Itasca County. There are several sections of the bill that relate to this exchange. There's 7,000 acres of land involved needed for the mining operations that are owned by the Blandon Company, which manages the land for timber production. And there's going to be a land exchange between Blandon and the Itasca County. And Itasca County would be authorized to sell the property to Minnesota Steel Industries by direct sale at appraised value. There's also provisions in here to provide that Blandon would not be penalized under the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act provisions. And there's also a provision in here to accept the some of the land exchange laws. The third area is the typical DNR land sale bill. It authorizes the sale of 11 parcels of land by the DNR. Total acreage is 202 acres. Most of the parcels are less than 5 acres in size. There was one provision added during the different committee hearings that was from the Fergus Falls School District that authorized over 60 acres of land to be sold at appraised value to the Fergus Falls School District. And the fourth topic area for the bill is the sale of tax forfeited lands by the counties. What has happened is there's different various bills introduced for each county for land sales. And what this does is authorize the sale of specific parcels of tax forfeited land by the 8 counties, approximately 582 acres involved. The DNR reviewed the county request and had proposed some restrictions in some cases which were incorporated into the bill. So the DNR has no objections to the tax forfeited land sales that are in this bill. And that's a quick synopsis, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering if you could check your packets and see if you have an author's amendment, A06-1649.
Well, I don't see it immediately myself, but let's see.
If you want, I could probably...
This is it, yeah. Okay. Is that the technical amendment, Representative?
That's the technical amendment on some transposed numbers, A06-1649, if we could get that moved to...
Okay. All right, we'll start passing that one out. But I think since we have some other amendments out, maybe we'll wait on that one. I don't see Representative Seifert here. Representative Seifert, I do see here. All right. Representative Seifert, while we're passing out, while we're passing out that other technical amendment, and I see, in fact, that we may deal with that in another way, too, but while passing that off, perhaps Representative Seifert, we can deal with the HDA 581 amendment. Representative Seifert moves the HDA 581 amendment. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, thank you. This is an amendment that was in the state government finance bill. Representative Gazalka and Solberg, I believe, know more, a little bit more about this than what I do, but it's a conveyance of property that's been worked out amongst all the parties. There is one change that was suggested by Representative Abler that I think it's a good idea, and that is if it is sold to a private entity that at a fair market value, that the state get the money. And just to clarify that, in 1.18, maybe Ms. Novak can help me, but how do we get that money to the state? It would be the sale must be at fair market value with money going to the state, or how would we say that, with proceeds?
Ms. Novak, sorry to put you on the spot. It'd
be 1.18.
I think so. Mr. Chairman, on page 1, line 18, after value, you could insert, and the proceeds of the sale must be remitted to the state.
Okay. Mr. Chair, we're going to incorporate that in the amendment.
All right. Page 1, line 18, after the word value, insert comma, and the proceeds of the sale must be remitted to the state. Representative Seifert incorporates that amendment. Other discussion to the HDA 581 amendment? See no discussion. All in favor of the 581 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay, next members will take up the technical amendment that Representative Cornish referred to. That's the A06-1649 amendment. Chair will move that amendment. Members, this is just a couple of numbers that got transposed. Any discussion to the 1649 amendment? Seeing no one discussion, all in favor of the 1649 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay. Let's see, I know we've, just a second, let me see what else we've got out.
We did a little amendment at the end to say the state has proceeds to sell it to a private entity. Was it oral?
Okay, members, I've got the A2 amendment here, and it has been passed out. I don't know whose amendment that is. Representative Rukavina, is that your amendment?
Well, no, Mr. Chair, I'll take the amendment, and I'm offering it for Representative Gill. I believe this amendment, and I don't know if it's for Wally.
Yeah, he's there.
But what this amendment does is it clarifies a case where we had this incentive program put in the law, I believe, in 2001, and Boise sold their land to another company, and this incentive payment was kind of held up by the Department of Revenue and not paid to anybody. So what this language does is clarify that whoever established the incentive program, the landowner can determine or can say after the sale of the land where they want this incentive program to go, the tax incentive, either to them or to the new purchaser of the property. But Mr. Kevin Wally is here and he knows the issue. There was a court case, and I think this just basically resolves the court case. Mr. Wally, if the chair would let you just discuss it briefly, was this agreed to by everyone involved?
Mr. Wally, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Kevin Wally. I'm speaking tonight on behalf of the Minnesota Forestry Association. We convened a working group this last year to look at the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act provisions, and we came up with a number of technical provisions, one of which was the item that was mentioned by Representative Rukavina. It's a particular concern to Representative Dill, but all of the participants in this group, which included Minnesota Forest Industries, timber producers, environmental organizations such as the Nature Conservancy, some of the individual companies, the Deer Hunters, the Ruck Grouse Society, all agreed to this package of changes, which are very technical in their nature. A couple of them were prepared by the Department of Revenue. The Department of Natural Resources was a participant in the working group. And these provisions have been presented to the Environment Committee and to the Tax Committee. And I stand for questions.
Okay. Representative Rukavina moves the A2 amendment. Members, discussion to the amendment. Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Rukavina, I certainly have supported the Sustainable Forest Initiative. I believe it was part of the 2001 tax bill, which I was the author of. I spent a fair amount of time understanding the issue, and I don't object to these amendments, Representative Rukavina. What concerns me is just given kind of the tenor in the Senate in which if anything dealing at all with any chapter of law that deals at all with taxes gets into their hands, and all of a sudden we get a 200 or 300 page tax bill back. I certainly understand the need for this, Representative Rukavina, and I'll certainly support your amendment. But Representative Cornish, if this lands bill, which I view as an important bill, gets tied up in other issues, I would certainly hope that you would resist anything in the bill that had nothing to do with the non-land issues. But I think Representative Rukavina is right. These are technical. I think the Department of Revenue supports them. And I would like to see them enacted in the law, but I do want to put up that red flag warning and hope that my friends on the other side will work hard with their Senate counterparts to keep the bill clean.
Chair, Representative Abrams, well noted.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abrams, as my understanding, you have a note from the DNR. This has already been adopted in the Senate companion, and the DNR is okay with it.
And Representative Cornish, I want to be very clear. I'm fine with this. I think this is a lot of good clarifying language. It actually makes the program work better. I'm just concerned from a procedural point of view.
Chair. Representative Abrams is saying, Representative Cornish, he wants to carry the tax bill, not he doesn't want you carrying the tax bill.
No, Representative Bradley wants to carry the tax bill.
I already got it.
Any other discussion of the A2 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Okay, members, next let's take up the A4 amendment. Representative Seifert moves the A4 amendment. Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is identical language to what we adopted last week for Representative Irv Anderson. It is relating to land up in Couchiching County. I don't believe that there's any opposition. This is a bill that is also moving through, and I thought out of courtesy we could help him out on this.
Any discussion of the A4 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A4 amendment is adopted. Representative Seifert, did you have another amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair. Representative Hamilton and I are making a three-word change, and I hate to waste paper, so we're writing it on by hand. I can have the paper start handing these out. Mr. Chairman, this is basically... and we can maybe just hand out the rest of them. I'll give you the three-word change, but I don't like to have them copy those all over again for three words. This is identical language to what we adopted last week in conjunction with the Anderson I amendment that was related to land in Morrison County. The three-word change would be on lines 1.7 afterwards. Sell would be comma lease or contract. After the word sell, it would be lease or contract, and I would incorporate that into the amendment. And then it would be identical to what we adopted unanimously last week.
Okay, Seifert moves the A3 amendment with, on page 1, line 7, after the word sell, insert comma, lease or contract. Any discussion to the A3 amendment? See no discussion. All in favor of the A3 amendment, go by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A3 amendment is adopted. Okay, members, I've got two other amendments that I see. Representative Rukavina, I think you have the A06-1696 amendment. Is that yours?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. Members, actually, that is a request from the Department of Natural Resources, and the first part of it deals with the wetlands mitigation issue that the St. Louis County board has worked out on for Polymet Mining Company for wetland mitigation. The second part of it deals with trust land, I believe it's school trust land, for the sale of peat, but if Mr. Meyer is here, and he might want, or Miss, yes, Ms. Lewis is going to address it.
Okay, Ms. Lewis, can you speak to the 1696 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Kathy Lewis, DNR. The very line two is also our technical amendment to correct the typographical numbers for the Marshall County sale. The Section 34 of the bill is, as Representative Rukavina says, for the Polymet mining operation, mm-hmm. and it gives authorization to St. Louis County and the Commissioner of Revenue to issue a conservation easement for wetland mitigation for the mining project. The Section 35 is that the DNR administers trust fund land adjacent to this property, and it's our determination that it would be in the best management interest to do either a public sale or exchange of the land as opposed to putting it under the conservation easement. And what we would do here is have authorization to do either a land sale or a public sale or a land exchange. And we're asking for legislation because it has commercial deposits of peat. We're not sure if it's chiefly valuable for commercial deposits of peat, but if it was, we would need legislation to actually do a sale or exchange.
Okay, discussion to the 1696 amendment. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Lewis.
Ms. Lewis?
Yes.
I notice I need a clarification, and that is that line 1.91, 1.20, it says the Attorney General may make necessary changes to the legal descriptions to correct errors and ensure accuracy. Why is that there? Is there a reason why somebody's going to be making bad decisions, and so we've got to have some way to correct it, or what is? I don't understand that.
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dempsey, this is fairly standard language that we put in land sale bill provisions in case there's any issues about how the legal description was written. In this case, when we do a land exchange or public sale, it's possible we do a meets and bounds description as we drive the actual provisions that are sold and sold. It's just a comfort language to cover any particular issues that might arise as we draft the legal language. But it's limited in this legal description to the properties in Section 36 of that township and range.
Mr. Chairman?
Or Representative Dempsey.
Ms. Lewis, are you telling me that we can't draft a bill or we can't... It just a little bit disturbing, it seems to me, as though that we can't write a piece of legislation that is going to... be specifically related and in no way in error of a land area?
Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's not needed here. You can delete this language if you like. It's just standard language as we draft land sale bills to cover the make sure that there's no errors in the call distance or something like that when you write meets and bounds.
Okay, well, I wouldn't, Mr. Chairman.
No, Representative Dempsey.
I don't want to delete that. It's just it's a little unnerving that we can't be accurate, and we're assuming that there's going to be errors. Gracious me, that doesn't seem to be a good policy that we would use in regard to public sale and exchange of land. It's a concern I've got, and I just was hoping that it would be a little bit better than that, but... And I won't ask that it be eliminated because obviously somebody's going to make a goof up and we're going to have some way to bail them out. I don't see why we don't correct the problem before we have to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other discussion of the 1696 amendment? See no discussion. All in favor of the 1696 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Rukavina moves the HDA 896 amendment. Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's two parts to the amendment. The first part deals with Lake Esquagama, which is a in the chain of lakes of the Embarrass River from Giants Ridge. The Embarrass River runs by Giants Ridge. There's Wine Lake, Sabin Lake, Cedar Island Lake, Lake Esquagama. Historically, there was a dam there. I think it's been there for, I don't know how long, pre-European time. But in any event, the DNR has taken control of the dam and established a high water mark that people that have been living there for 30 years can't get their boats in and out of the water anymore. And so what this does is set the high water mark 6 inches higher than what the DNR says the established ordinary high water mark is. And members, I have everyone on the lake to a person that isn't opposed to this, because they said that this, it's never been like this before, where people have to have waders to get their boats out to the lake. So they've been trying to work with the hydrologists up there for 3 years. I think Representative Cornish is a game warden, knows the hydrologist, and probably supports my argument. He can't say it publicly.
All right.
The other part of the amendment.
Representative Rukavina.
The other part of the amendment. Members, is a neighbor down the road has a unmeandered lake. It has no inlet, and a WPA ditch that was dug as an outlet, but it is an unmeandered lake. For some reason, the DNR has claimed it's public waters. He owns all of the land around this pothole. And I don't know how the DNR could get to it or why they want it to be public waters, but because it has historically been called Fawn Lake, they put it on their list of publicly owned waters. Now, the DNR person up there said, well, we could theoretically land a helicopter on the lake, and then we could do whatever. I don't know what they could do. Catch crabs? I don't know. But anyway, excuse me, that didn't come out right. But there's nothing in the lake except a few fish and feet and mussels and crabs. So, I don't know why they want it, so it basically says that this lake is not public waters because nobody can get to it, and I don't know why they want it to be public waters.
All right. I got several people that want to speak. I guess maybe the author of the bill, Representative Cornish, I'll start with you.
Mr. Chair, I've been notified that the DNR, Kent Lacusmo from the Division of Waters, would like to speak to the amendment.
Mr. Lacusmo.
Mr. Chairman. We have problems with each of these sections. For the first one, the Lake Esquagama Dam control, this legislation would establish the ordinary high water level, which is, as defined in statute, that's a technical determination made based upon the evidence that is on the landscape. So we look at where the vegetation changes from predominantly aquatic to predominantly terrestrial and determine that number. So setting this in statute would create a poor precedent. And it actually, this section doesn't solve any of the ongoing issues that the people have with low water. The problem has been it's been extremely dry up there for the last 4 or 5 years. And as you all know, precipitation is going to be reflected in lake levels. If it's dry, the levels are going to be lower. This dam is, I believe, number 17 on our dam safety repair list. So in the near future, we will be doing a project up there, and we'll be able to address some of the issues that people are experiencing with low water levels.
Mr.
Representative Rukavina, does
that
point?
I can address that. Mr. Loxamo, you know, I've often thought of introducing a bill that people at down in Lafayette Avenue will have to wear field shoes or field boots to get out once in a while of the building, because, Mr. Oswald, there's been over 3 feet of snow in northern Minnesota the last 2 winters, right up there where you're saying there's no precipitation. I know I had to wear, last year when I was logging with my buddy, I had to wear one of those things they put on fire hydrants, you know, that ball, so they could see me out in the woods. So, you know, for you to say that, but members, I just want you to look at the scientific methodology here, and here's the notes from the 12:54 p.m. Stain on boulders at 134.48.6. Stain on downstream dam abutment We also obtained ground elevations at 9 trees, 1 oak, 1 poplar, 1 willow, and a pine. That's how they figure out the average ordinary high water mark. But, Mr. Loxmo, I'd rather go with people that have been on the lake for 30 years and have never had to push their boats out, and they've had to since your person has been pulling that top board out. So, and they've been working with you for 3 years, Mr. Loxmo, and nobody's done anything about it. Now, I know these people personally. In fact, I hate to tell you this, but this is the only Republican part of my district. So I'm doing this for all the Republicans in my district. But on Lake Esquagamoff there, the country club used to control the dam, and when they gave it over to the DNR is when the problem started happening. I don't know what you're talking about as far as no precipitation, because up in northern Minnesota we've had over 3 feet, and the problem keeps getting worse. So you can tell me all the science you want, but measuring it on popple trees and birch trees doesn't seem to have any more validity than what I'm trying to do, which is raise it just 6 inches. And I have no opposition from anyone on the lake, members.
All right, I've got Representatives McNamara, Huntley, and Wagenius. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I'd like to divide the amendment between line 1.5 and 1.6. And I'd like to do the, I don't care. Do you care, Cornish? We can do the second one first. Mr. Chair, the second one, I think Representative Rukavina has made a point. It's a small private pond or slough of 25 acres or less. The top one, I think, sets some bad precedent. I just don't agree with Representative Rukavina, though he can be colorful at times. I think the first one especially is bad policy.
All right, members. Representative McNamara divides the amendment between line 5 and line 6. We are on the second half of the amendment. Discussion to the second half. Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was going to divide in the same place, but for opposite reasons from Representative McNamara. But since we're on part two, I know nothing about Fawn Lake. I've never seen it. Don't know where it's located. This whole bill is full of, I thought this was the Ways and Means Committee that dealt with finances. But this whole bill is full of public sale of land bordering on public waters, authorizing the following counties, blah, 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 blah. Private sale of land bordering on public waters is authorized in the following counties. You can go through here four or five places. Brooklyn Park borders on public waters. Marshall County, public waters. Stevens County, public waters. No, that one is not on public waters. And Mr. Chair, I know nothing about any of these locations. All I know is that land on public waters, where possible, should be preserved. And why we're dealing with this in this committee is beyond my comprehension. So I'm opposed to 1.6 through 1.11.
Okay, well, Representative Huntley, just so you know why the bill is here, the bill does have the state buying and selling several hundred, if not a few thousand acres of land, and I guess to me, if the state is going to be buying or selling land, there's obviously a financial impact to the state, and so that is why the bill is here. These particular amendments maybe don't have a whole lot to do with the financial wherewithal of the state, but they deal with topics that are in the bill, and Representative Rukavina has brought it forward. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually going to be with Representative McNamara on the top section, so if you want to deal with the bottom section first, I'd like to speak when we come back to the top section.
Okay, yep, we're on the bottom section. Discussion to line 6 through 11. Representative Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I've had the pleasure of dealing with the DNR on a few issues, so I'm going to vote with my friend, Representative Rukavina. He knows the situation, and he knows the area, and I think that's probably the most reliable source for the committee.
Representative Cornish.
Could Director Lockesmo speak to it, Mr. Chair?
Sure. Mr. Lockesmo.
Mr. Chairman, members,
The public waters inventory was authorized in the late 1970s, 1979. It directed the department to undergo an inventory of waters that should be protected. That inventory included, in unincorporated areas, which this is, those wetlands, type 3, 4, and 5 wetlands that were larger than 10 acres in size. What we have here in Fawn Lake is a 25-acre type 4 wetland. It went through the process in the 1980s. It was clear. It clearly meets the criteria. It still meets the criteria. It is a non-meandered body of water, but members should know there's only about 4,000 meandered lakes in the state out of the 12,000 lakes we have. So many of the public waters and lakes in the state have private ownership of the bed and surrounding areas. This designation does not give the public right to access. That right is specifically, or that issue of public access is specifically identified in the statutes, that a designation doesn't provide the public right of access. What this does is it's an area that was significant of state protection, so alterations of this area would require state permits. It doesn't change the nature of it. It just provides a regulatory framework that the state would exercise.
Well, Mr. Lacusmole, I am going to learn something tonight. If you tell me the difference between a meandered and an unmeandered lake.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. A meandered lake is one that at the time of the government land office survey, the surveyors excluded that area, so it wasn't up for public sale in the initial government land office sales. So if you were buying a 40 someplace, you weren't buying something that was underwater, basically.
That's a meandered lake.
That is a meandered lake. Those that were identified in the government land office survey, which was done from 1850s to 1880s.
Representative Abler, did you have a comment? Okay, Representative. So this is a lake that was not originally on the survey back when it was surveyed in the 1800s, is what you're saying.
Mr. Chairman, there may have been an area identified as,
This is an unmeandered lake, so this one was identified.
It may have been. I don't know. It wasn't, when the surveyors came through, they didn't go around the edge of the lake with their survey boundary. So if this was in the middle of a section, they wouldn't have done that. Only if it were on a section line, they may have meandered it, they may have not. I have not looked at the original survey to see if it was, how that was dealt with in the original survey.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, first of all, Mr. Loxley, you're incorrect on this is Sandy Township. It's an incorporated township. It's not unincorporated, as you said. That's why it says Sandy Township. It's had the local unit of government. It just had its centennial. So, I don't know what you were talking about there. Number two, members, both the Army Corps of Engineers and St. Louis County said, we don't know why this lake is public waters because none other lakes of comparable, size and that are on it, especially when they're unmeandered and have no inlet and outlet to speak of. And, Mr. Loxman, I think you've run into trouble with my neighbor before on this because he has all the land around it. I don't know how many other places like this where you have all the other land and where the person actually not only owns all the mineral rights, pays the taxes on his 280 acres, and doesn't take out the 23.5 acres or whatever this lake is, but also members is one of the few people that actually has water rights under the old Homestead Act prior to the late 1880s. So it's kind of a unique piece of property, number one, for that reason only, but members, I have 3 or 4 ponds on my property, that are 3, 4, 5 acres. I don't know if you want to try to come over and catch fish and claim them to be, public waters, the DNR, but, it makes no sense why you would even want, you can't handle what you have now, Mr. Locke. You can't handle what you have now, and why you would want to even be involved in this is beyond me, and, we've gone round and round on this for a few years, so I just hope the members will support me.
Mr. Lockspaw.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Rukavina, if in fact the area is incorporated, which I don't doubt your statement,
Then the standard for defining public waters is 2.5 acres and larger and type 3, 4, and 5 wetland. So it makes it even clearer that this is properly identified. And as far as us managing what we have, we are following the statutes and the direction that the legislature has provided, and we are administering the public waters permit program and the public waters identification as directed.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative,
the farmers on this committee might just have heard that and been interested to note that if you have a 2.5 acre pond on your property and incorporate a township, Representative Hamilton, you now have a public lake on your property. So. I would hope you keep talking against it because I can get some more help from you on this because I think Representative Hilke now has actually realized that you're talking nonsense up there too. So,
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lacasmo, could you inform us as to on a private water like this, what is the difference between the designation of being a public water versus a non-public water? What's the significance of that?
Mr. Lacasmo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Osmond. If it is a public water, there's a state DNR permit program that an individual would go through to make any alterations. If it's not a public water, they would go through a permit program either through the Wetland Conservation Act that is administered locally or through the Corps of Engineers. So either way, there are permit regulations that are applied. It depends on which, whether or not it's a state or a locally driven program.
But Mr. Lacasmo, I mean, what is the difference for the DNR between a public and a private lake other than just the way they permit it? I mean, you must have another criteria beyond that.
Mr. Chairman, the identification of public waters in the early 80s was to define those areas in the state that the department regulated. We went through and did that for each county. There were public hearings as required, and that identified those areas. We aren't adding new areas as public waters. Those maps and lists that were created in the 80s are the answer to what we regulate. So you can go and look on a map that's in the county to see what areas the state regulates and which areas the state does not regulate through the DNR's permit program.
Representative Cornish.
Just in layman's terms, it isn't so confusing. If you've got a lake like this person has, just because it's public doesn't mean that he or she can't use it. They'll have full access to it. They can fish, hunt, do everything they can with it. The protection just keeps it from that person going out and draining it. Or doing and changing the water course of the lake. They can use it, they can skate on it, they can do anything they want with it, they control access by other people to it if they surround it with private property. This is protection.
Representative Clark.
That was my question. Does the public have access to a lake that's totally within private land?
Mr. Chairman,
Ms. Blackmore.
Only with permission of the landowner.
Or they can fly in.
They can land out without permission.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to know, is that true that they can land without permission?
That they could land a helicopter on it?
Well, anything without. I mean, can they have access without permission? I'm not hearing an exception that's real, or is it not real?
If a person can get legal access to the water without trespass, they have use of the entire surface of the water. But they have to be able to get on without trespass. So theoretically, could somebody land a helicopter on a small body of water? Yes. But can they walk across property or from a road and get access? No.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lacasmo, does this lake have an inlet or an outlet?
Mr. Lacasmo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara. You know, it has some watershed that maintains it. What it has for inlets and outlets, I don't know.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Lacasmo, if it has an outlet or an inlet, conceivably that could provide public access to the public water, but you're saying it's so small that it would not be deemed to be accessible?
Mr. Locksmull.
Mr. Chairman and Representative McNamara, if somebody could, if there was a water course leading into this, if somebody could float a canoe down or some watercraft, that would be legal access if it were of sufficient size to float that.
Representative McNamara.
And do you know if this has an inlet that's large enough to provide canoe access?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, I don't know.
I do.
I do recall that Mr. Rukavina, Representative Rukavina said it did not.
Representative Rukavina.
Chair, there is no access, or and I said, Representative McNamara, there was a ditch dug during the WPA days, and if it gets to a certain level, you can see a little bit of water trickling under the county road in a culvert that's probably a 16-inch culvert. But, members, again, there's. I think the issue, you hit the nail on the head, because the issue was just another layer of bureaucracy, and the Army Corps of Engineers does regulate this and would regulate any pothole on any of our properties, whether it's Representative Trembla's district or Hilty's or Hamilton's or whatever, and so would the local county. Why the DNR wants to be involved in this is beyond me, but I hope the members can support me on this.
Well, members, I think we've got a pretty full discussion of this issue. Any other discussion? Seeing no discussion, I will call for the vote on the second part of the 896 Amendment, lines 6 through 10. All in favor of the second part of the Rukavina Amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Sure, could I have a division, just like you, my friends.
Representative Rukavina calls for a division. All in favor, raise your. All in favor of the Rukavina amendment, raise your hands. All right. Opposed, raise your hands. There being 15 ayes and 11 nays, the second part of the Rukavina Amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I'm more friends than you thought.
Your friends are just quieter. We'll now go to the first part of the Rukavina Amendment, page 1, lines 2 through 5. Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, I do know something about this particular place, and in fact, the owner of a piece of property I know, which is about 75 feet from this dam, and I've spent many a night sleeping there listening to the water trickle over the dam. And I will say that this individual is probably the only non-Republican that owns a cabin on this particular lake. And he in fact, I would say he's not even a Democrat. He's probably a socialist and lives in my district. And
what do you think of the amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm going to vote against everything that I don't know anything about in this bill, but I do happen to know something about this one, and adding 6 inches to this dam would make the everybody's property a lot better and would not hurt the environment at all, so I support this part of the amendment.
Members, that's over. This is the first time Representative Huntley has ever supported me on an environmental amendment. This is a done deal.
Representative Logenius.
Yes, thank you. For Mr. Locksmull, just refresh my memory here. Is the high water mark a property? Doesn't that define property rights?
Mr. Locksmull.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Logenius, what the high water mark defines is the level of DNR jurisdiction, where it's a county authority above that line and it's a DNR authority below that line. So it's a level that the lake has reached, and it's kind of a level that protects the people from the lake and the lake from the people. So there's a, but it's a level that defines the regulatory jurisdiction.
I'm sorry, Representative Logenius.
Okay, if I could follow up on this, I know that Representative Rucavina was having fun with how the high water mark was set, but it's my memory that that's normally how it's done. You are looking for what was the natural level of a body of water, and it is actually fairly easy to establish if you're experienced in doing this. Am I right about that, Mr. Lacasson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lagunias, yes, we look at the physical evidence, which are stains on features around the lake, beach ridges, the elevations of trees that have been affected by the water, and it's a, you know, for our staff that have done hundreds of these, it's a relatively straightforward determination. So this is a scientific determination.
Representative Lagunias?
I am hesitant for us to go down a road where science is telling us one thing and we say, well, no, we're going to set another level statutorily, because from now on, this is would be fair game for any lake, any body of water, and for ways and means to sit here and start down a road of establishing high water marks does not seem like a wise thing for legislators to do, particularly since it does determine who is in charge. And I know that Representative Rucavina, you think all your friends want this change, but one friend decides, oh no, I didn't like that, and do they take it to court? How is that done? I certainly know how it's done if we rely on the law as it stands now, but it does seem like we're changing some rights, and I'm really reluctant to do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lagunias, I don't want to belabor this, and I know you don't expect this bill to take this long, but Representative Lagunias, you know, these people have been on the lake for 25, 30 years. I know them. I've worked with some of them. Some of them are my friends, and they've never been in a situation like this where they just can't get their boats in and out of the lake. And I have talked to, I told them I wouldn't even do this if everybody wasn't in agreement. And the lowest landowner in the lake has agreed with them. And as Mr. Boximo said, I'm giving the DNR more authority, because as the lake rises, then the DNR has more authority, because then the county's portion above it, the high water mark, shrinks, he said. So I'm helping the DNR out here, and I appreciate your support.
Mr. Boximo, just a question. Is it true that many counties and townships set their regulations in terms of where you can build a home as a setback from the high ordinary high water mark?
Mr. Chairman, yes, the ordinary high water mark is the threshold for determining setbacks.
And so depending on where the ordinary high water mark is, it could really affect a person's right to build or where they would build on their land. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
I'll withdraw the second part of the amendment, but I do want to, Mr. or the first part. So, Oxmo, I want you to work with us and not ignore these people for 3 years, like they've said in the letter they've been ignored, because I will keep doing this on every bill that's coming through, and there's another one coming later on. And Representative Osmond, you told me I could put it on this one, too. So, but, Mr. Oxmo, there's no common sense here. And at some point in time, the DNR has to start acting with a little bit of common sense.
Mr. Chairman,
please work with me on this.
Mr. Lacasmo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rucavina, we will work with you on addressing this issue.
We hope there will be peace in the valley. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, I know the bill has been withdrawn. Mr. Lacasmo, when you establish a high water mark and that's such a scientific thing, I wish you to use the same scientific thing on Lake Carnelia in Washington County. When they had the high water mark established and the county gave permits, and then the water came up and there was houses with water up to their eaves. And I'd like to have that same scientific high water mark established in Mink Lake in Wright County. When they had the high water mark established with such scientific evidence, and the water came up, and all of a sudden, lakes and them were in the middle of the lake. I really like this scientific.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Lacasmo.
Representative Solberg. Generally, what's happened in those experiences, like Carnelian and Pulaski and Mink Lake,
is the housing development occurred before there was an ordinary high water level?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that is not the case at all. Because I know Lake Cornelia, a gentleman went and built a nice house there, and he got the high water mark from Washington County, as you said. He built it, his walkout basement 4 feet above the high water mark. And the last time I saw it, he had a bank up like this, and he had to walk down into his basement. So don't say that was not established beforehand.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm kind of curious about the use of the word scientific. I know we've moved beyond it, but when the water level is set to begin with by a dam, how can we argue that that's scientific? It would seem to me that's DNR policy, but certainly not science that's determining the water level, even with or without that board that was referenced earlier that's now taken out that drops the water level.
Well, members, we're kind of moving on beyond this amendment. The Representative Cornish, if you want to make a response, go ahead and let's finish up this issue.
Yeah, just for clarification, setting the ordinary higher watermark doesn't make your water go up or down. Wherever the DNR sets the ordinary higher watermark, it's a standard for adjusting, like you say, setbacks. It's not the DNR's fault if you set the historical ordinary high watermark and then you get a flood and it goes above that. You know, if it stayed above that for 100 years, maybe that would establish a new one. But what they're trying to get at is a sum as close to science as they can, the OHW, ordinary high water level, where the terrestrial quits and the aquatic vegetation begins. It's not a perfect science, but it's the closest thing that they can get to it, and it's the only standard that they can use.
Okay, Representative Rukavina withdraws the first part of the 896 amendment. Are there any other amendments? See no other amendments. Discussion of the bill. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, just real quick, Representative Cornish or the DNR, I'm looking through the bill like on pages 12 and 13 where they're doing land either sales or conveyance like the city of St. Bonifacius, West Minnetonka, Industrial Park, Minnetrissa, where they're doing blocks 10 through 15 of Minnetonka Center in Shorewood and some of these areas. You know, they're basically going to the city, and I'm wondering what's the determination that it go to a city versus being given to private sale? Because I would think those properties would be worth some money in places like that.
Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, members, these requests came to us from the counties, and what they're doing is managing the property handing it off to the local units of government. They have made a determination that it should stay in public ownership, but the local units of government are willing to assume the responsibility of managing the lands in these cases. So there's not a determination that they don't believe it should be in public ownership. It's just changing which unit of government would manage the lands.
Representative Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cornish, just a quick question. I had a constituent contact me who had some concerns about the William O'Brien issue, and I'm going to be following up with them, and Deputy Commissioner Holston said he would talk with them. But it's my understanding that if there is a problem, that this is voluntary as far as the sales and those types of things. Is that correct? When they're delineated in the park, within a park?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnish, Vandiver, I'd be very interested in working with you on that because the impression is that these are non-controversial. Everybody's been talked to. If that isn't the case, then we'll have to revisit it between now and the floor.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Other discussion to the bill? Seeing no further discussion to the bill, shall renew his motion that House File 3397, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'll tell you what. This is a long goal. I'll be.
Okay, where's the bill? Okay, next we'll take up House File 3605. Representative Osmond moves that House File 3605 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
And we're passing out a couple of amendments. Representative Osmond. Could you speak to the bill?
Mr. Chair and members, House Bill 3605 is the policy portions of what was the environmental finance bill that was sent to this committee from the Finance Committee, and appreciate your support. Do you want me to walk through the bill, Mr. Chair?
I think that let's at least first deal with the amendments, Representative Osmond, and if people have particular questions about the bill, we can get into more detail on it. I think the first amendment that we'll talk about is the A06-1722 amendment, which is being passed out. Representative Osmond moves the A06-1722 amendment, and maybe while it's being passed out, you can talk to it, Representative Osmond.
Yeah, I'd like to get that copy of that amendment. So.
Our Representative Holberg?
Can you tell me why the bill is states that it's Representative Tingelstead's bill and Representative Osmond before?
There's Representative Tingelstead.
Mr. Chair, I can answer that for Representative Holberg.
Holberg.
Sorry about that. Holberg. We've changed that on the floor of the House. It just hasn't been changed on the bill. But we have changed authorship. I'm the chief author of 3605. And the Amendment 1722 is amendment that I'll move for Representative Tingelstead. And she'd like to speak to the amendment.
Representative Tingelstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you know, the LCMR reform language that we heard in this committee a week or so ago is part of the House File 3605, and what the Amendment 1722 is relates to the trust fund allocations associated with the LCMR reform. This bill was separately carried by Representative Pete Nelson in the Senate. They match up with Senator Dallas Sams. So what this language is it's all trust fund dollars, and your committee here had $550,000 in the separate supplemental budget form bill a couple weeks ago here, and this is the veto dollars from last year. There's about 3.5 remaining, and again, this is trust fund dollars. It's not general fund dollars, and so with what this amendment does is reallocate the vetoed money from last year. If it's not completed this year with appropriations and the governor's signature, most of it would go back to the corpus of the trust fund and would not be available for natural resources projects. Actually, the beginning of the bill here, the first few pages of the Amendment 1722 deal with just some technical changes on the reform language, and then it goes into some carryover language, which is kind of a procedural thing with LCMR on the bottom of page 1, and then into page 2 and 3. Most of that is not new language. It's the carry forward that relates to projects that are near completion but just need a little bit extra time and is part of a procedural thing that's done each year through the LCMR process. I do have with me here Susan Thornton from the LCMR staff if there's any technical questions on this. Otherwise, I'll stand for questions. Mr. Chair.
Representative Tingelstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And as we get close to the end of session here, we're concerned about making sure that these dollars get allocated.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, if that doesn't make it through the whole process before we adjourn, those trust fund dollars go back to the corpus of the trust fund and would not be eligible for natural resources allocation. So with this amendment, it would match up with the agreement through Senator through the Senate with Senator Dallas Sams, who's the chief author over there. And we have met within the last couple of days, including staff from the governor's office, to come to a consensus on the allocations within this amendment. So we feel that it's important to go forward with this and make and maximize the opportunities we have for trust fund allocations for the natural resources.
Okay, discussion to the 1722 amendment. Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tingelstad, on the first page, line 16 and 17, it added in financial assistance program. Could you explain which assistance program that is? And well, let's just get that personnel note by a follow-up question.
Representative Tingelstad, Ms. Thornton, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Susan Thornton with the LCMR staff. And the project that starts on line 1.15 is a wind energy rebate program and clean energy resource teams. And this simply expands. Right now they are only, according to the language, can only give rebates for wind energy turbines. And this would expand it to enable them to assist communities in a broader scope for projects beyond just wind energy turbines. And my understanding is that there is a there's discussion with Hennepin County and some Southwest counties on looking at actually expanding the opportunity for wind energy development, and this would enable them, if it comes to fruition, to provide more assistance in business planning, financial assistance, other than simply the wind energy rebates. And the goal is that this would then lend itself to, we would actually have the installation of more wind turbines because of a result of this partnership.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, maybe just a quick follow-up, because when I first thought, I thought maybe that was kind of individual family financial assistance or energy. I understand it's not that. But is somewhere then, because the others are fairly clear, the clean energy resource teams and the community wind energy rebate are fairly clear standalone terms, but this one is a fairly broad. Is that defined someplace in the legislation?
Ms. Thornton?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bradley, yes, we have work programs related to all of these projects, and this was an appropriation from last year, 2005, and they're simply asking for more flexibility in implementing this project. And so I don't have it with me. I'd be happy to provide it.
Thank you.
Other discussion of 1722 Amendment. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, thank you. You know, I don't know about the content of the amendment itself, but I'm a little nervous that this may open up for other amendments on the floor and the bill end up getting hijacked with some controversy. Do we have some assurances the bill will get pulled if there's any controversial amendments offered?
Representative Osman.
Mr. Chair, that's difficult to commit to, since this is a major issue for the governor to get this reform accomplished for LCMR, and that's part of the bill. And so anything, the language that's before you does not any more germane to any other issues than the language that's already in the bill.
Other discussion. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm on the bill itself. We're at the on the amendment.
We're on the amendment, the 1722 amendment.
Line item. I'll pass.
Okay. Anyway. Seeing no further discussion on the 1722 amendment, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Okay, members, next, the chair would like to move the A1 amendment, which should be passed out now. And members, the A1 amendment just deletes Section 39 of the bill, which dedicated land sales to the Natural Resources Department, as opposed to in the State Government Finance Bill and other bills we've had before, we've had land sale money dedicated to the general fund, and have previously passed bills in this committee, this session, dedicating land sales to the general fund. So I think it's in conflict, and I would hope that you would support the A1 amendment.
Yes,
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I also support the amendment. This was actually a little shot from our finance committee to Representative Seifert's finance committee for selling our land and not letting us be part of that process. So we just thought we'd give them a little nudge there on the issue.
But you guys are friends now?
We're friends now.
Oh, okay.
Any other discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move an oral amendment on page 5, subdivision 13. And what I'd like to do is on line 1, strike Sunday church and just insert religious. And on line 5, 2, after the word, delete church, Sunday church and put religious service.
Okay. Representative Paymar moves the oral amendment. Page 5. Line 1, delete Sunday church, insert religious. Page 5, line 2, delete Sunday church, insert the word religious.
Sure.
Discussion to the Paymar amendment.
I understood, Mr. Chair, that this was an issue in Representative Junkie's district, but, you know, it could be in other areas where someone would want a religious service held in a state park, and I don't know why it has to be specific to one religion.
Representative Osborne, any comments on the Paymar amendment?
Mr. Chair, I do not know that that there was supposed to be day specific. I think that the religious was the intent. As I understood it, I would support the amount.
Okay. Any discussion? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the Paymar oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Other discussion or other amendments to the bill?
Third reading.
Other discussion on the bill as amended? Seeing no discussion, Representative Osmond renews his motion that House File 3605 as amended be recommended, pass, and referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, members.
Okay, members, we have one last bill on the agenda. House File 3058, which I believe, while it says is authored by Representative Pennis, chief authored by Representative Pennis, is now, I believe, chief authored by Representative Sertich.
Yeah,
so, Representative Sertich, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. The chair will move that House File 3058 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
Correct.
Okay, Representative Sertich, we have an amendment being passed out. Maybe you can briefly tell us about the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill it does two things. Number one, it fixes some language that is needed because of a legislative audit in the way we do business at the IRRRB. Most importantly, what it does, though, is help refund a portion of the 21st Century Minerals Fund. I was before this committee, I believe, either last week or the week before, discussing the need with some projects moving forward, some larger projects. I really want to publicly thank first the chair for taking some time to meet with some of the private folks on this issue, also Speaker Strigham, for taking some time to see that there are some real projects moving forward, over $1 billion worth of private investment into some new mining and steelmaking in northeastern Minnesota. And I think we have a way to make sure that we're moving to that next generation of mining and actually steelmaking in northern Minnesota with a real project here. And I thank you for laying this bill over and taking the time to see what we can do to help out, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Sertich. Members, at this time, the chair will move the A3 amendment. Members, what this does is the bill that came to the committee had $49 million in the that was restored to the 21st Century Mineral Fund out of this year's target. We obviously don't have that kind of money in our target available still, but what the amendment would do is restore $12.5 million effective July 1st, 2007. And as I've met with Representative Sertich, Rukavina, Solberg, the president of Minnesota Steel over the last week, I feel that having some money in the 21st Century Mineral Fund for these projects would be a good investment for the state, good for jobs for northern Minnesota. It's my understanding the state can expect royalties of $4 million a year for at least 10 years if this plant is in fact built, and of course the money will not be released unless the plant is in fact built. And so, members, I think we've got a real positive return on our investment for a commitment of funds here, and so I'd urge adoption of the A3 amendment. Any other discussion to the amendment? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we have to authorize, is it necessary that you have to authorize expenditures from the triple or double IB or whatever it's called now?
Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Earhart, this money is actually appropriated by deed, and it's in a deed account, Department of Employment and Economic Development, okay. A state account.
But it has to be, Mr. Chairman, it has to be appropriated. The double RX here doesn't do it by itself.
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, this money comes from deed, but is matched with some money from the IRRRB.
Okay. Other discussion? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A3 amendments, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sertich, kind of the standard question when you have a member of the minority from the Iron Range carrying an Iron Range bill that's a House file. You're not going to allow this to become the omnibus Iron Range bill, the omnibus tax bill, or anything else. It'll be within the four corners of what's intended here. I certainly don't oppose anything you're doing here, Representative Sertich, but you'll make sure that we don't see a whole bunch of tax provisions hung onto this House file.
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abrams, to quote Representative Rukavina from earlier, duly noted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Clarification that absolutely no anything to do having anything to do with any general fund or statewide implication, no.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, I see a local government aid amendment afoot, and I guess what I'm trying to say nicely, Representative Rukavina, is that I supported the original Doug Johnson Fund. I support projects that the IRRR A or B or whatever you're going to call it these days is going forward with, but don't take that support to mean that you can put on extraneous matters. That's all I'm saying, Representative Rukavina.
Sure.
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Abrams, there's not going to be any local government aid amendments or anything to this.
Okay.
Representative Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sertich. When I saw you were bringing this this forward and I saw that you were taking the funds from the general fund, it occurred to me to have an amendment drafted to actually have you or give the Iron Range the opportunity to do a local option sales tax with no referendum. Representative Rukavina, he likes that so much. I think he did that to the folks of Hennepin County. And I thought about it, and then I thought, you know, it wouldn't be fair to offer an amendment like that, so I decided not to.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Clarification, Representative Larson. The commissioners of Hennepin County did that to the folks in Hennepin County. I had nothing to do with that that measure.
Except for your phone. Representative Wagini has got that right. Fooey. Representative Rukavina.
Chair. Our commissioners would never come to the legislature and ask for that.
Well, be careful, Tom.
Seeing no further discussion, the chair will renew his motion that House file. Oh, sorry, Representative Dempsey. I'm sorry, Representative Dempsey.
Thank you. I've got two questions. Could the author explain to me the essence of line on page 2? Line 2.19 down to line 2.27. Could you explain that to me, please?
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dempsey, I'd be happy to in 1 second. I just have a copy of the amendment, and now I have a copy of the bill. And can you just repeat where that is, please, Representative Dempsey?
Representative Dempsey.
I'm sorry. I'm on page 2 of the bill.
Yes.
All right, page 2 of the bill, lines 2.19 through line 2.27. I'd like to have you explain that to me. I've got some concerns. And then I'll have a second, Mr. Chairman, I've got a second question.
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dempsey, I'll take the first swing, and I'm sure if I miss anything, Representative Rucubino will follow me up on this. There is a new plant, taconite plant, being developed up there, Mesabi Nugget, which is actually a value-added product. We go from taconite pellets, which has a bunch of oxygen in it, to these nuggets, which are better for putting into electric arc furnaces. And this will allow us to utilize the royalty lands and lease some of the lands up near Hoyt Lakes where the old LTV site is. It's actually, I believe, a money winner for the state of Minnesota if we were to pass this language. And if I forgot anything, I'd defer to Representative Rucubino to add anything to this.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dempsey, there's, I think, a general statute that says the state can only lease land for 5 or 10 years at the most. And in this particular case, when LTV was went into bankruptcy, there was some land that the IRRB actually got because of some loans that they had with LTV and other things. And so they IRRB owns this land and they want to build on it. Well, nobody's going to build on it for 10 years. And so this allows them to build on it for 50 years.
Representative Dempsey.
And Representative, if this company, LTV...
The LTV no longer exists.
Yeah, are they... Okay, so...
They're the ones that filed bankruptcy and we got some land that they used to own.
Okay, and is the and I guess the question then that I would have is the new steel mining company already in Minnesota, or is that coming to Minnesota?
Representative Solberg.
It's a new company. It's a company that's owned by Steel Dynamics out of Indiana, Kobe Steel out of Japan. And it's a new process. We've put money in to develop that process. Representative Rukavina, I think it's a Minnesota company, but it will be building the plant in Minnesota. They had a choice to build it in Indiana or Minnesota, and they will be building it in Minnesota on this particular land. So they need to have a longer-term lease.
And one more question.
For Representative Dempsey.
And that is on... and that is on the same page, line... the 2.31, and then over to page 3, 3.2. Where the concern that I've got, it says, shall annually prepare a budget of operational expenditures, programs, and projects as submitted to it by the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Board. Is that an agency that is going to do the planning for that company? Or if not, subdivision 11 mean?
Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dempsey. If you look on page 2, lines 2.8 through 2.28 are section 2. That is dealing with that the leasing of that land. You skip down to section 3. That's an entirely different area, which deals with the IRRB budgeting process. And this language and the subsequent language, you follow through to the end of the bill, deals with the audit issues that the legislative audit had with the IRRB, with the agency and the board. So if you think of it, you just kind of draw a line there. The private business that's doing the mining in Section 2, in 2.8 to 2.28, is entirely different than that next section. Section 3 deals with the agency, the IRRB, and how that operates, the budgeting process there. Two separate issues.
Okay, and then, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Dempsey.
Who is ultimately then responsible for the budgeting?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dempsey, threefold. The IRRB, the board, which is mostly elected officials and three appointees, the commissioner of that agency, and the governor's office.
Well, that's Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dempsey.
That's reassuring, and I don't know the total number of jobs that might be up in the Iron Range, but boy, this is just doggone good news, let me tell you. And I hope that we'll be working with the governor that is, I think, responsible for part of this, if not all of it, to be quite frank with you. And I think that's noteworthy, and I'm proud to say that I think we need to, he can follow his lead, and by gum, we're going to see that there are going to be some jobs that will be good paying jobs, long-term jobs, and that's what we need.
Absolutely.
So I wish you well in regard to that, and I'm glad that you did it.
Thank you.
And Representative Ferris, tell me again, how many permanent jobs are estimated to be with this facility?
Okay, the Mesabi Nugget facility is only 50 jobs, and when we're looking at this new money and this new project we were talking about, Minnesota Steel Industries, you're looking at 700 jobs, much more construction, thousands of construction jobs getting that $1.25 to $1.6 billion investment. And then the spin-offs are usually 3-1, so you're looking at quite a few jobs.
Okay, Representative Earhart.
Thank you. Representative Sirkich, I've been looking for the section that covers chopsticks factories. Is that, can you point that out to me?
Representative Sirkich.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, I think I was in about fifth grade when that happened up there. That facility is actually being used, and there are different jobs in that plant, in that building right now, but we're not making chopsticks on the range.
Oh, all right. Seeing no further discussion, the chair will renew his motion that House File 3058 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed. Okay, members, there may be other meetings this week. For those who are on the Budget Bill Conference Committee, please make sure you grab your big black four-ring binders with the side-by-sides in it. And we'll go over to 123 Capitol immediately. With that, the meeting is adjourned.